Think Again with Borderlands Cooperative.
Join us for critical conversations about things that matter.
Every Friday at 10 a.m. on 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on your dial.
And 3CR Digital, streaming live at 3cr.org.au.
So together, let's think again about important matters affecting us, like economics,
politics,
education,
health,
climate,
and what we can do about it all. Welcome to our 352nd episode of Think Again, a program produced by Borderlands Cooperative, an organization working for social change for over 28 years. We are broadcasting live from the 3CR studio on the unceded land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation.
And I'm Jennifer Burrell. Today, Jacques and I are talking with Madison Moffat, who viewers might remember from the program, fortnightly program, Trans Creator Radio, which you've just heard today. And that's just before Think Again, of course, every 2 weeks. Welcome to the program, Madison.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
Yes, it's a real pleasure. So we asked Madison to join us today because of their insider knowledge about how administration work has come to be more and more offloaded on us by companies and government. We talked about this actually on the program a year and a half ago in early December 2024. It's really a plague, with many of us spending a few hours a week on average on admin stuff that used to be done by companies and bodies we're dealing with from day to day. So just to give a few recent examples, a friend of mine spent about 4 hours trying to make a small health insurance claim. The card wasn't working when she went to the health provider, so she went to the actual office of the company to claim in person, and as part of what she had to do, they had told her to download the app. But after them both trying for nearly an hour, the customer service person gave up and said her Android wasn't compatible. So that's half a day in her life. I know a friend of Jacques spent 5 hours trying to do a small admin thing, which couldn't be done because there was a hyphen in her name.
There was a hyphen, you know, there was a long name, and we have now trying for about 5 weeks to get a bank account signable by one of a person. So it's every day.
And it's not interesting work.
That's right.
So in the end, as I say, the obstacle was with that one that there was a hyphen in the name. So much for automation. And personally, I recently spent about 5 hours altogether trying to rejoin a professional association. That was over several days. And when I first joined years ago, in the 90s, it was took 15 minutes, 10, 15 minutes. So this time, 5 hours. And as well as 2 separate trips to a pharmacy to get StatDeck signed, I spent hours trying to fill out a malfunctioning online form. And it was identified as being malfunctioning because I was fortunate enough in the end to talk to a real person on the phone who had the same problem as me. So there you go. And so that was more than half a day of my life. And interesting that economist Ross Gittin wrote an article about his own do-it-yourself experience with the ATO, Australian Tax Office, he wrote about that in The Age on the 17th of June, and noting that getting a human being on the phone at the tax office is extremely complicated these days. But who cares? I would add it's just us doing the work, and we do it for nothing. And I would add, as part of this preamble, sorry, Madison, we're getting to Madison soon, but
no.
But if it was actually announced that workers were being required to work an extra 3 hours per week for nothing, there would be an outcry. But this stealing of our time for admin work has happened by stealth over several decades now.
Absolutely.
And, the prices have not gone down of the products we buy or the memberships we need or something like that, because if they would have saved and increased their productivity by doing this, then the price would have to go down, wouldn't it?
Now, why would you drop the price when the whole point is to cut costs?
Yeah, exactly. So yep.
You've missed the point.
I know their
Chuck's
point.
A bit stupid
their
like
point.
That.
I was just making my point.
Don't tell me I said that. So anyway, no one's talking about any of this. It's not in the news. It's part of what we call the background wallpaper, scary wallpaper of our lives.
Yes.
But we thought we would cover it, which is why we have asked Madison Moffat to help us understand how this came to pass. So, again, welcome to the program.
No, thank you for having me.
So, firstly, Madison, can you give a bit of your own background, just explaining to listeners why we've asked you to come in and talk about it?
Yes. So, you know, I was a commerce graduate in the early 90s. Well, I was a commerce student to begin with, and I was working with a lobbying firm who also did a lot of outbound market telephone interviewing. And it was explained to me that this was all in aim of determining customer preferences with what they called demand channels, so that you could then take those preferences and understand a reason for them and skew them in favour of the corporate client, so that customers went from a more expensive demand channel to a less expensive, at least for as per your point, less expensive for the corporate entity demand channel.
So just to stop you, demand channel. So that's the channel where customers are making demands.
Yeah, that's right. Making demands. it's a rather skewed way of looking at customer relations. From the perspective of the customer, but from their perspective, you know, you're imposting time and resources, don't you see, when you ask questions. So how can we move that demand towards a more efficient channel? So that was my first intro. And then from there, I've just been, for my sins, and I'm sure that I'll go to hell for it, been in a lot of corporate executive roles where a lot of it's been retail, and I've been part of executive leadership teams where I'm talking with people who work in areas such as customer satisfaction and customer perceptions. And a lot of those discussions were about tailoring not so much what we do in order to meet customer expectations, but to subvert those customer expectations in order to benefit the company. Mm-hmm. So, and that's just been because of the nature of the work that I do. It includes risk management and operational integrity and operational excellence and all these wonderful terms. Mm-hmm. It's been a lot about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so yeah. We're getting a real insider perspective.
You won't go to hell because hell has been outsourced.
That's right. Yeah, hell's where they send the casuals.
So, moving on, Madison, perhaps going back to the 90s, can you tell us a bit about companies' cost-cutting drives to reduce the costs of dealing with customers?
Yes. So, you know, basically there was a bit of a quandary where on one hand there was an enhanced opportunity to engage with customers.
Oh, I love that. I love your terminology.
I'm actually going to capitalise as much on this terminology because I think it's a bit like, Prime Minister, when you hear Sir Humphrey. When you hear Sir Humphrey talk, you get a better understanding because of his semantics. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to try to do the same by sharing some of these semantics with you today.
Thank mm-hmm. you. Tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah. No.
At you.
No, indeed. Well, I'm a very different person to what I was, but anyway. Conversely, though, it also made companies' administrators more accessible to customers, and this became a bit of a problem. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we can contact them, but they can also contact us, goddammit, and that's taking up, you know, precious resources in an overall economic situation where, if anything, we need to be driving cost-cutting.
Yeah.
You know, we need to be making greater efficiencies when it comes to and productivity. Exactly.
We're breaking a lot of ground on 3CR with all this bad language.
Yeah. Well, you know, as I said, you know, my feet will burn whenever I walk into a church, you know, so as a result of the work that I've done. So, you know, basically that was the general, that's the general thesis of it, you know, that the opportunities for better engagement with customers and, you know, driving the customer experience also led to greater accessibility of business administrators. Mm-hmm. And so there was a real problem with agency capture where, you know, our customers will end up actually capturing our administrators. Yeah, that's the sort of words that would be used. And instead, you needed to start using, utilising our knowledge of the various pros and cons of the various demand channels in order to steer people away from those which capture our resources.
And cost a lot of money.
Well, that's resources, yeah.
And direct them to the channels, demand channels, just to show you I'm learning. The demand channels that don't cost so much.
That's exactly right, yeah. And it was really just that mechanical, you know, to begin with, yeah.
That's right.
And I think around that time you said in the past there was a new philosophy of demand management.
That's right.
So cutting losses with people who aren't happy, just riding the wave of complaints. Mm.
Yes.
And I think you said human resources were behaving as a team, doing their best to squash a groundswell of complaints, which cost more.
That's right.
So instead of, I think, focusing on the proletariat, sorry to use that alternative language, we'll go to our own goals. So trying to get the cost of dealing with people in line with their own goals. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, this was all part of an overall neoliberal philosophy of management, where they wanted flatter structures, but at the same time they wanted less direct engagement with customers, and of course that would generate complaints. But as you say, and this became particularly so at the beginning of the industry disruptors, where they would introduce all sorts of models of service delivery that would actually, at least in the short term or medium term even, upset customers. Mm. But the philosophy was that you ride that out, because basically you don't, it's the whole 80-20 thing, 80-20 rule, where you don't want to be sweating 80% of your resources, you know, on the 20% of people who are exceedingly unhappy.
The whingers.
Yeah, yeah. So what you do instead is the philosophy that was often being spoken at these various TED Talks and the like, you know, and various conferences, would be that you literally sideline those issues to ensure that you're maximising the extent to which your human resources and your technical resources are getting on with continuing to roll out and maximising and optimising the effectiveness and profitability of the main product and how you market it and distribute it.
Yeah, which of course coincides with the new management approach, which I still remember in the early 90s how happy we were to have to have a more relational kind of an approach to management.
Yes.
You know, to think about, to more horizontal, that you think about the management and the business as a relational issue where you talk with people and people keep learning, all of that kind of stuff.
And the organization gets the learnings from all the people in the organization.
That was the end 80s and throughout the early 90s. And then by the mid 90s, of course, comes the full blast of the neoliberal approach with control management and all that, which you have been talking about.
Yes.
So replacing the learning organization with sort of like a new version of a horizontal, of a vertical command kind of way.
Yeah.
Top down command and control.
So. Yeah. Well, yes, that's so. But you know, the flip side to that is, you know, it's funny how fascism works. When you would listen to these talks, they would talk very earnestly about, you know, this flatter structure would result in better relations with their customers, which is highly ironic given what it is that we're now speaking about today.
It was for grounding the importance of relations, which don't know if they did that on purpose, but they backtracked from it, obviously.
No, I think it's worse than that. I think that, you know, there's this idea, there's this model in their head of the customer or the client, right? Yeah. And it comes down to one little thing I'll hone in on that you said, Jacques, that was, you know, that the customer learns and the company learns. Mm-hmm. So, and the assumption is, you know, that there's this entity that is the customer that over time will learn about how best to engage with your specific enterprise.
And keeps and control. And the customer keeps control.
That's right.
Being told.
Yeah, but in reality, between the two entities of customer and corporate entity, it's only the corporate entity that has the ability to retain that knowledge.
And the power.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
and so as a result, the customer just continues to be baffled and want to know why they're spending, you know, 30 minutes each time trying to resolve an issue.
That's right. Just let's catch our breath a little bit and yes. let our listeners catch their breath and listen to Awamar by Amaru Tribe.
Listening to Think Again on 3CR Community Radio on 855 AM on your dial and streaming live at 3cr.org.au. Today we're joined by Madison Moffat, who's telling us about how it came to pass that we are all doing so much unpaid admin work, which makes me very angry, that companies and governments used to do. And, excuse me, before the break, Madison was telling us about new company directions from the 1990s to reduce the costs of dealing with pesky customers while redirecting them to different demand channels that cost less money. I'm using the language. Thank you for teaching me this, Madison.
You'll burn in hell too now.
Yeah, oh dear. Let's now focus on governments and their central role in all of this. So, Madison, I understand it all began with governments offloading regulation work, or the cost of regulation, onto the industries they were regulating, which then had a flow-on effect of companies then saying, okay, let's do that too, and then offloading their admin work onto us.
Yes.
So can you walk us through that?
Yeah, and I might use a little bit of an example, which was an actual contingent example I came across at the time. So at one point I was working for a consulting firm that also was a bit of a political lobbying firm. It had some corporate clients, but because of the nature of the political lobbying that it did, it also had a fair idea as to how it could guide businesses to meet new regulatory requirements. And what started popping up is that some of these sort of medium to large scale food businesses, in their tender documents, all of a sudden they're being asked about what HACCP plans they had, hazard analysis at critical control point plans they had. And the answer was none. So what was this all about? Well, what it was actually about was that councils in Queensland, which probably other states too, but I'll talk about the experiences I had, were actually writing literature, you know, in various gazettes and that, sharing with each other, you know, the regulatory compliance burden is what they would call it. Mm-hmm. So the burden on governments and councils of keeping businesses compliant. So what they decided to do instead is, in the case of, for instance, food safety, is instead of employing all of these inspectors, you know, be going around, you know, to hundreds of inspections over the course of a day, very expensive. What you did instead is you offloaded the regulatory work onto the business. Mm-hmm. So they talked about that transferring regulatory compliance cost onto the end user. Mm-hmm. In other words, you know, the business, although obviously, as per our discussion, the end user ends up being the customer, but we'll talk about that in a bit. So anyway, so governments decided to start using self-regulating policies. So an example of that is, instead of having all these inspectors, instead you had every business had a HACCP plan, which at hazard analysis at critical control point, controlled from paddock to plate, yeah, all these lovely phrases, paddock to plate, controlled all of the aspects of production, distribution and service that could result in foodborne illness. But long and the short of it is, instead of councils spending all this money, it was the businesses that had to now spend all of this money and determine how their internal human resources, I use that term intentionally, cynically, their internal human resources will drive compliance in these newfound regulatory compliance areas.
Well, would an example of that be when you're doing renovations or building and you get your own inspectors instead of the government inspecting the integrity of the building work? Then it came in that was privatised, basically.
Yeah, well, not only that. I mean, even though, say, WorkSafe, for instance, will provide guidelines as to what will constitute safe working at heights, the actual regulatory burden is on you, the builder, and you also, the premises owner, to ensure there's a safe system of work.
Yeah.
Now, once upon a time, instead, these things were regulated to the nth degree, and then inspectors on behalf of councils and state regulatory agencies would check these things. Now, instead, you'd be expected to do your own little audits every day, do your toolbox talks and all this sort of stuff. Now, some of this is fruitful, but ultimately what it was about was passing on, as I say, the regulatory compliance burden from governments onto the end user. And this started a chain effect, which I think we're going to talk about in a bit.
Well, go on, proceed.
Okay, so, you know, basically, businesses don't like that squeeze, you know, where on one hand, because of the new emerging technologies that I'm talking about, they're getting more demand in terms of their resources from customers, because customers are finding it easier to engage. And on the other hand, these pesky councils who we lobbied so that they would leave us alone, you know, and stop having their inspectors coming around all the time, they had the cheek to instead decide that we're going to take on the regulatory burden cost, you know. So basically, what did they try to do? Well, the only thing that they can do, which is pass on that cost onto business-to-business clients initially, and then eventually onto consumers.
Of course.
So that's why, where we start at the beginning of the program, why we're doing all this unpaid admin work that governments and companies used to do. And you know, it occurred to me too is 3 weeks ago we did a program on automated decision making by governments, with the onus put on people to challenge wrong decisions. Of course, robo-debt's an example of that.
Yes.
And it was good. I just wanted to actually alert to that. We talked about this a few weeks ago. And with AI and automated decision making, of course, this can, in part, is a continuation of this trend, putting admin back on and less power to end users, us, but also putting the admin burden onto us.
Yeah, and let's not forget, consequently, lifting themselves of the burden. That's the important bit. They don't really care how burdened we are either way, so long as they're relieved.
Yeah, and I would like to just say one good news came since we did that program a few weeks ago. The Albanese government did announce that it's putting in place a framework to direct the future of automated decision-making.
Yes.
Yeah, so anyway, just a little bit of good news amongst all of that.
Although we do know that the main participants in the decision-making forums, and the policy-making forums, will be the industry representatives themselves.
That's right.
Yeah, so which requires persistence and on our part to really keep following, be the squeakiest wheels we can.
Yeah. And if we're not, then it will go all their way.
Yes, I usually talk about, we used to talk in the 70s and 80s about the political economy with a hyphen between the political and the economy, and economic rationalism and neoliberalism pinched that hyphen.
Yes.
And so that means, therefore, that businesses didn't want the regulation of the government anywhere, so they moved away from it and declared that markets work for themselves.
Well, they tried
and
to.
Then they dropped basically the control of the, as you said, of the government, regular control with inspectors and all of that.
Yeah.
But of course, that was good for them, but they still didn't like the cost.
No, not at all.
Which then self-regulation would bring in, and they passed that on to the consumers.
Yeah,
so that's is that the kind of...
Yeah. But there's also other more positive to positive effects for them. So having to take on these self-regulatory regimes included taking on quality assurance systems, which then actually did help them learn exactly how to effectively pass on the compliance burden onto consumers.
They learned the bad lesson from government.
Absolutely.
So like dominoes.
Well, you know, and part of this was that these businesses would have to learn these systems in order to maintain their big contracts with government. So there was that knowledge passing that took place naturally as a result.
So what should we do about this? What do you suggest? What could consumers and listeners do?
Well, I think that, you know, Jennifer's hit the nail on the head. You've got to be a squeaky wheel. You know, and yes, it will take a long time sometimes to get in front of a human being, but there are ways and means. You know, there are ways and means of minimizing the amount of time that will take. So, you know, you just refuse to use the options, for instance. You know, so answer yes or no, and then you don't. You know, and it'll ask you again, and then you don't answer it. Now, some of them, these machines will actually hang up on you as a result. Some of them still will refer you to a real person. So, you know, I think all that kind of, those kind of resistance points where you've just got to recognize that, you know, you are not having a customer experience as they would claim.
Yeah, that's right.
By the way, there was a legal case that I sat in on, and the judge was very frustrated with a lot of language that was used by the retail company's reps, and he concluded by saying in his judgment, and I think I will never forget, that every time I shop from here on in, I'm not shopping, I'm having a customer experience.
Yeah, I hate that phrase, customer experience.
But, you know, you're not actually, I mean, that's propaganda, right? But the reality is that what you're locked in a battle. You're locked in a battle that's all about the business doing its best to maximize its productive output by minimizing how much you impost on that productivity machine.
And of course, there will be government departments, organizations, small businesses who might actually, and some do, capitalize on, you will actually talk to a real person when you deal with us.
Yeah, they do actually. I think, you know, what happened during COVID is that there was a groundswell of people who all of a sudden needed to use MyGov. And what do you know? All of a sudden, MyGov started to work.
Which was really S-H-I-T.
It was terrible.
Software, because I tried to use it years ago and got kept getting in loops. But suddenly, it started functioning well.
Yeah, so well. In fact, I reckon it's probably one of the best examples of a functioning government website now.
And and I think you're suggesting that was because more well-heeled...
Yeah, all these people who normally are able to fend for themselves, who are never, at least not by Services Australia, you know, put in a situation, a bind where they need to be contacted, need to contact people, but they can't. They're never in that bind in the past. All of a sudden were, thanks to coronavirus.
That's right.
And there was going to be an enormous explosion.
And this is such an interesting train of thought, which I have to bring abruptly to an end.
Yeah, for sure.
Because we're coming to the end of our program. It's been extremely illuminating and interesting, and we don't get this story anywhere covered. So very grateful to you, for Madison Moffat, for coming into the studio and talking about it with us today. I'm sure we'll ask you back again today.
Be glad to.
So thanks for supporting Think Again by tuning in to our program. Because it's about time.
We've got a couple of announcements.
Okay.
You do the announcement. There's a public rally for a data centre moratorium. Not for a data centre, a moratorium on a data centre. Bad wording. Sunday, August the 9th, 2 p.m., Hanson Reserve, Robert Street West, to Footscray. Well, I'll put links on our website. And also, there's another event, Beyond Neoliberal Urbanism, the Future of Public Life and Space, Saturday, August the 29th at Borderlands Cooperative. And I'll put a link. We'll tell you about that again. And also on Sunday, this coming Sunday, 2nd of August, Free Palestine Rally, Stop the Genocide in Gaza, State Library, 12 o'clock, 2nd of August.
Yeah, and think about that as customer and political entity revolt. Thanks for supporting Think Again by tuning into the program, and to 3CR Community Radio. If you would like to send any comments about this program, please email Borderlands, info@borderlandscooperative.net. Our past programs are available by podcast on a variety of platforms and via the 3CR website at 3cr.org.au. And to finish our program today, please enjoy Milky Mana by King Stingray.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.